You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live, and I am your host, Dr. Michelle. Always humbled, always thankful, grateful. Oh, gosh. So yesterday we played an archive, so I apologize for that. I'm having car troubles. So, you know what? I don't even know what we played yesterday, but as I've always said, all of our archives, you can get our archives by going onto breadboxmedia.podbean.com and look at the old archives, because let me tell you, the topics are always pertinent. It's always about you. It's always about relationships. It's always about depressions and happinesses and spirituality and connecting the dots and nutrition. And the stuff just never gets old. That's why I love, as part of my journey, I love to look at spiritual, we all do, don't we? Spiritual authors from 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, listening to the beautiful wisdom of the church mothers and church fathers. And there are church mothers, actually. I was listening to this priest reading from some very ancient, maybe 100 years after Christ. So, you know, I get the spirit, not, and spirituality is mentality. That's what it's all about. It is mental reality, mental health. Your mind is what can oftentimes make you sick, make you well. Bullets are bullets. Infection is infection. But why would we, one person, get infected by swimming in an infected pond, let's say, and other people won't? We have immune systems. We have all kinds of stuff. It's not because of spirituality necessarily, but it's not a one size fit all world. And it also is not a world that you see in front of your face, the sleight of hand world of illusion, which is what we are all about, especially these days. If I heard a priest yesterday saying, we have elderly, but we do not have elders. And it's like, it's so right on. We really don't. And believe me, the older you get, the more that's going to have meaning for you. When you're having, when you have 10-year-olds and 5-year-olds and 2-year-olds and 3-year-olds, it's all about this lovely relationship that you have, of course, very trying as well, and tons of responsibility. But there's a connection there, and you're still connected with your youth. It's almost as if there's not a lot of space, maybe if you're in your 40s, but there's not a lot of space between you and your child as far as the culture goes. And that's why this beautiful canopy of evolutionary spirituality, planned evolution, however you want to look at it, the two, creation and evolution, are not mutually exclusive, by the way. There's nothing saying that, I mean, if it was, then if there's a seed, the seed should always stay the seed. You know, no, it changes, and plants change and evolve over time after how the earth is in the sky and how it, what its needs and its waters and all that. So the truth of the matter is that the elderly become the elderly. That means in our minds now, in our modern minds, usually we think of the elderly as people who need to be taken care of, not people we should go to for nourishment and advice and openness. We think of them as people that we in our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s need to take care of, instead of, in a lot of cultures, people strive to go there. Now we're afraid of going there. and we do everything we can to not go there. So we juxtapose that to health, keeping yourself up, looking the best you can, feeling the best you can, constantly developing and evolving. And I this is not something that's a done deal. When I was talking to you last week, I spoke with you about a woman that I met the Sunday before, who is just about 80, I think. She said she was very close to 80. So I'm assuming I would never have guessed her at 80. She's a very vibrant, attractive woman, with these sparkling, sharp, bright blue eyes. And she'd been, in a very short period of time, after 59 years of marriage, losing her husband. And with one, she broke her neck on an accident like any of us could have, slipping. She slipped. So, and then she had some other diagnoses, and she went from a huge, beautiful place that she'd been in for 60 years with beautiful land around her and trees and footage, square footage in the house and room and all the memories, to a tiny, tiny, tiny little apartment. And this was a huge change for her. Most of us would think of it in terms of, well, that's where you have to go as you get old, you know, that kind of thing. And she was looking at it as, this is my transition. This is my transition place. She is in grief, of course, and missing, and she's going to her bereavement groups and things like that. But yeah, she's going to her bereavement groups, and she sings in the choir. And we're going to talk today about antidotes for depressions and antidotes for the obstacles in life and the sadnesses in life. Because as the same priest was saying yesterday when I was listening to him to YouTube, as he was speaking of this, I was reading something, a kind of a companion thing that I was reading. And I'm not giving you the names right now because I'm spacing on them, actually. I'll get those for you on the other side of the break. But what he was saying on the one hand was, we talk so much about living, about life in abundance, that we look at everything in abundance, and the word abundance is a word. I'm paraphrasing, I'm putting my own little editorialism in here, but it's a word, abundance, abundance, abundance. And so we think in terms of abundance. Oh, I want to feel the abundance. And of course, that is meant in a spiritual context as the abundance that is not material. It's not about the body. It's not about 5,000 grandchildren. It's about the abundance feeling. But he turned it on its ear, which I loved. And he said, really, no, the beauty of spirituality in how we mature spiritually as we walk onto, and he calls it the second half of life. And you could be 5 and have the second half of life if you have leukemia, or 20. You can be any age. It's not the second half of chronological life. It's living in scarcity. The joy of living in scarcity, the freedom of living in scarcity. And scarcity does not mean that you're foraging in fear and panic and living under a bridge somewhere. But I will tell you, some of the people that I'm not advocating this, because many of them are so painfully broken, and they do go to they're stuck. They're not in the second part of life. They are, as this priest would say, they're stuck in their addictions. And that's where they go to for a comfort that never comes. But I've met several people who are homeless that I meet and I help serve when I can, in a volunteer position. And they are filled with abundance. They are grateful. They bless God. They feel blessed. And yet they will go that evening and hope that someone hasn't taken the spot they found the night before to sleep in. So, you know, there are those people. They're rare. They're few and far between. but there are those people. And so how can we take a lesson from that? So today I'm going to talk a bit about depression, not a lot, and how the question is it a life sentence? I was taught that, yeah, I was taught the rhetoric of the day, and it was medicine. So it's not like it was fake. It's what medicine, the medical world, believed. You may have to be on this antidepressant the rest of your life. And I would ask myself, why? Why? Why do we have to be on these medicines the rest of our lives? Why? Now, I'm going to really reiterate here before we go on to the rest of our program. If you're on medicines, you stay on your medicine and you start thinking and you speak with your doctors or you get that help. Or if you think you want to get off of something, you don't blindly accept. You think and you think and you look at it and you talk to your experts. If you need medication, you need medication right now. So do not get off your medications. Go to your health professionals, your mental health professionals, your medical professionals. We have God made these people for a reason, and me too. Believe me, I know about it. And I don't think it's awful. That's where I go. That's where my dad goes. If I need something, I go. So we're going to talk so much about this. I'm also going to tell you something about a poet and the word that he used to express what we need to do in life. This is Dr. Michelle. Y'all get your coffee. Have a great moment. I'll see you in just a minute.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. So we are going to talk about depression, but in a happy way, believe it or not. Many of you suffer from depression and it's not happy, and I understand it. I myself have suffered from depression, really very, very bad depression at some points. So I totally understand from the inside out and from the outside in. So I always say, what better person do you want who understands what it actually feels like? Now, that said, I do not subscribe to the notion that you have to go through everything in order to be compassionate. You just have to be the kind of person who just has it. You got it. You got it, the it factor. When I worked a lot with soldiers, one of them one time said, I can't talk to anybody who hasn't been in Vietnam. And you're the only one who understands. You're the only one who gets it. And I remind him, I said, well, I was not in Vietnam and never been to war ever. But I then told him, because I wanted him to understand that it's something internal. It's something in the soul. It's something that a person has. Everyone has their own gifts, charisms, talents, whatever. And some people, and sometimes it's a burden, you have your own abilities. Some people are more emotive than others, and some people are less emotive. Not better, not worse. Need all of you. I do not need my dentist to be emotive, at the time. I don't need my hand surgeon to be emoting on the beauty with tears down his eyes or while he's working on my hand, let's say, if that's my hand, or attaching a new hand to me. I need them to be precision guided, laser beamed, organized people. But I want my poet to be emotive. You know, I want the person to write the song that I want to learn to play to be emotive. And I want the person who's listening to my troubles to have been in some semblance of the same song, different verse. Because that is what's going to give us our compassions. So with you, when you suffer, if you suffer from depression, this applies to everything. Depression, anxiety, I don't care what it is. There's things that you can do that can be in conjunction with your mainstream work. A lot of depressions come from having no outlet to express the desires and the emotion and the yearnings and the pains and the beauties that are inside your heart. People may call you too sensitive, T-O-O, as if there's a too to it. Now, we can make someone too sensitive in the way that we can create people without, we can create snails without shells. We can create people without skin. And I mean this metaphorically. This is how we do it. We do not allow them any new situation. It's like the big controversy, which it's even, you know, I don't even get it. I've only heard it in the news. So I'm just going to use it as an example. Perhaps I'm not knowing the whole story. So this is just a loose example. But there in the news lately, we've got that whole situation where it's become a controversy, where I think it was the University of Chicago. Could be wrong. I'll look that up real fast, but it's, you all know what, you've heard it in the news, where it's been a big controversy because the administration sent out a letter to the new students coming into the university that they're just not going with this, the microaggression thought and the little micro triggers and the that trigger and the this trigger. And they just believe in freedom of speech. And I know that, and they stated that. And there's this big controversy, as if it should be a controversy, in the way that, yes, everyone has a responsibility to make sure that they're not just open to destruction. So you don't bring someone who's destructive to come speak at your campus. But it's not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of pretty much everyone would agree that this particular, you know, someone who wants, I don't know, revolution or something right here, right now. I, you know, this isn't part of our subject, but, you know, within reason, we say, bringing different speakers without, and also tying the mouths of your own instructors so that people, I guess right now, which is something I actually was not that up on, a lot of campuses are creating these safe spaces, you know, mental space, safe spaces where people can refuse or don't have to go or be in a part of something because they need this mental space. Well, yeah, I can see where you should be able to not have to listen to certain things. However, here's the point. If you bring a child up where they never, we saw this happen in Japan for a while, where they were so clean, different areas, this was like 30 years ago, that they all of a sudden, their immune systems were messed up in some places. And this is what happens. If you do not allow your child to get sick, to get a cold, to vomit, to cough, to have a scrap it up with people, to be disappointed, to perhaps be called a name, and then understand, then you have the responsibility of talking to that child about being called a name. I'm not talking about all this trolling and bullying and to where it's gotten to crazy points, but you have to learn and go to the immune system, the emotional immune system, the mental immune system, the spiritual immune system, and you have to be able to build that up. You cannot build an immune system up without having have exposure to a challenge. It will not get built up. Why do you think some of the biochemical warfare, sadly and destructively and awfully and painfully that people used where they infected blankets with measles and then gave them to people whether it's in the Native American culture that was partially wiped out by that, whether it was inadvertent by traveling or exploring, or whether it was on purpose, whether it was here, whether it was in Hawaii. There was the whole what was it called? There was a movie not too long ago. It was a couple decades ago. That was about exploration, I think, and wiping out an entire, accidentally wiping out an entire population of people because they had no immunity to the diseases that the Europeans had. So, and the Europeans had no immunity to certain other things. So over time, the only way to build up immunity is either vaccination and or exposure. So emotionally, it's the same thing. If you protect your child from every little thing and you tell them they falsely that they are little kings and queens, and you give them that impression, they will not develop the immune system. If you constantly approach them as if they are broken medically, emotionally, or physically, and they're too fragile to face the world, they're going to believe it. The mind is a powerful thing. The mind is very powerful. There was a Saturday Night Live skit with Eddie Murphy where he said, "The mind is a powerful thing and should be destroyed in our lifetime." And it was so funny. The reason it was funny is because we kind of are doing that, you know? We're kind of destroying the mind in our lifetime. We're almost on that campaign. We don't know we're doing it. And that's what was so funny about it. It was like something that was said that was all mixed up, and it was said with such conviction. But we are doing that. So I want to talk about a little bit about that depression, or fill in the blank, is not a life sentence. Just like diabetes is not a life sentence. Now, there can be a point where you go beyond, but you know, I don't even know really if there's a point if you go beyond. I see too many people talking to the priest, the new priest, who was talking about going to some of the hospitals and hospices and cancer wards that he's been to, and he's just been blown away with people that should have been gone. They look like they're taking their last breath, and they go on and on and on. Other people who are just out walking around, and you know these people. I know these people. It's happened in my own family. I've seen in my own family where one minute, you know, I've told you this before. The baby's jumping around on ultrasound, and while the ultrasound is happening, the baby stops jumping. And I know some of you have experienced that same very thing, and the pain and the sorrow of that. Why? They never even found out why. They don't even know to this day why. It happens. So we really don't know the time and place, and we don't know how we can recover from the most things that we're told aren't recoverable. So I am Dr. Michelle. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you are listening to Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. I do not think that I gave you a number yet for the whole program. You can also email me anytime, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. So, there was an article called Depression is Not a Death Sentence. And, you know, I the article was okay, but I like the title. I like the title. This was written, trying to find out who it was written by, actually. And, well, we're just going to go. It was in the Huffington Post, so you can all maybe look that up. And I think it's actually says depression does not have to be a death sentence. However, I will say, if you are severely depressed, if you even entertain, and what is suicidality? It's thinking that you would be better off not being here. If you occasionally have a fleeting thought of that, that may not be that you're suicidal. However, I am telling you, if you are at a place where it starts to become like, well, I really don't need to be here, and it starts, you just start to think it's okay. You need help now. You have family. It doesn't matter how old you are. Story just the other day of someone in the Northwest, someone who knew someone who had a friend, whose wife killed herself at a very, I don't know, fairly young in the way that, you know, maybe 50s. And just they weren't having a downturn of fortune or anything. There were some issues that were going on, but she had had depression for quite some time, and they didn't really understand that she was that close. So, you know, if you're that person, no one can read your mind. You may reach out, you may not know that you're reaching out, but if you know someone who is severely depressed, if you know someone who's doing increased either acting out and or withdrawal, then really help them get some help. Or if anyone's ever talked about it, take it seriously. Okay? So take it seriously. I'm not minimizing it. This was the name of an article. But if you have, and I'm saying, but if you have, or I could say both and really, do not get off your medications. Please see somebody. Counseling. This really can be, I've been in it. I understand it. I know it. I've dealt with people. I know that depression, you know, a lot of, when you're in it, it is the power that it takes over, especially the isolation. There's a point where you don't even want help. There's a point where it's like, oh, I feel so bad. I need help. Sometimes you're there, but sometimes it's like, what? You know, you're just like staring. Don't want to wash, don't want to bathe. You lose all motivation. So in depression itself, deep depression, you just lose motivation. Nothing. It's like, what are you even talking about? I just, you know, just leave me alone. You want to be on the couch. You want to stare out a window. Don't want to bathe. Not, this doesn't always happen. Sometimes you overeat. Sometimes you can get erratic in your behavior. Has many different faces, many different presentations. But if you feel down or sad, and it's not because of a medical condition, because you got to rule that out. I keep telling you, please rule it out. Please rule it out. Diabetes, heart disease. I've told you story after story after story of people where I opened the door, and because of my past training as a general practitioner, I've opened the door as a psychiatrist and just say, you know, go to your cardiologist now and then come back to me after you've seen them and after you've been treated by them. And they've been in congestive heart failure because I can see the signs on their, you know, perhaps in their skin, not always, of course, but particular people who have had actually suicidal elderly, who've had suicidal thoughts in the middle of the night. Well, they were laying on their backs and they were in congestive heart failure. Well, that's not everybody. That might be rare. But the fact is that's a thing that happened. There can be many different things that cause this. Medications are any kind of medication that helps you sleep, that depresses parts of you, calms down your heart rate, depressing certain things that are going too fast in you, I don't care what they are, they can act as a depressant on the brain too. Alcohol is a depressant. Being without proper sunlight is a depressant. Not getting enough proper sleep is a depressant. Your body needs to reconnect. So sometimes we do need that medication, that mainstream medication, to get us out of the hole. Or we need to have some very strong intervention. Maybe you need therapy 3 times a week, 4 times a week. Not always and not for all time. And this is what I'm saying. You would no more think about letting your acquired disease from, let's say, African sleeping sickness. You've gone off to help in a mission somewhere and you come home and you just can't move and you've got some exotic disease. You would no more think of leaving that untreated than you would anything else. And you would no more think that perhaps you will have this the rest of your life. There are certain things you will have. Doesn't mean, though, that you have to be a victim of them. You have herpes, you're going to have herpes most likely the rest of your life. Maybe modern medicine will find something different. Now, the difference between, just like when you have shingles, when you get older, I know I'm not really getting off the subject. This is very important for things like depression. We're going to get into other parts of it and how you can ameliorate pretty much the garden variety feeling of depression, but you can also enrich all of your life by some of the things that we're going to talk about in our last segment. So you can, and I think, you know, I said the wrong number. It's 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. Thank you, Alex. I was not paying attention to the screen. I want you to please know that you can and have an obligation. If you don't see around you, even for 1 second, it is commonplace to just feel like nothing. Everything are shades of gray. You just don't want to, true shades of gray. You just don't want to be part of anything. There are transformation processes, transition processes, as I told you with this woman. This woman who's 80 said, you know, this doesn't come without tears. A church, an ancient desert mother, I wasn't Scholastica, I was someone else with the same, I can't remember the actual name, but talking about how this transition period you have, you don't know you're actually entering into it. Sometimes you can't say, I'm opening that door to transition. I'm having the transition now. It must happen as a matter of course. It's not, oh, I'm old enough for this, because it happens in kids that are 9 and who won't be on this planet very long. And I've seen it happen when I didn't even know anything about this stuff. And I marveled at it. Wow, this child has come to an amazing place. My own brother at 30, am I going to die soon? I'm coming to the wisdom of an old man. This is stuff that just happens. So please get the help you need. Please get the medical. Make sure, because depression must be diagnosed. And sometimes they're not doing it these days. You walk in, say, I'm depressed. They give you an antidepressant. But you're supposed to, just like you're supposed to be treated in after you know, or maybe in conjunction, that there is no medical. It's not explained by a medical disease or a substance. So if you are taking Benadryl for allergies, that can depress you. I knew a young girl who got depressed taking Advil. If it's not because of a substance, a medication, some people don't consider their prescribed medications fair game. Your prescribed medications, your heart medications, your diabetes medications, your lots of things, low thyroid, all kinds of things can cause these things. So if it's not caused by a medication, either an over-the-counter substance or perhaps a bad diet or seasonal affective disorder is actually meant, you can get that done. Sorry, take that back. Or a medical condition, then, you know, you have to look at, have you felt sad? Have you felt depressed? Have you felt isolated? Have you felt lonely? Have you felt just like completely amotivational? You don't want to do anything. Then you need to start looking at this. You really do. So in our last segment, though, we're going to talk about things you can do today to begin to look at all parts of you, to hydrate that emotional immune system, your spiritual immune system, and ways that you can begin to nourish yourself and help ameliorate, decrease these feelings that you might have inside of yourself while you are making yourself available to mainstream things as well. So I am Dr. Michelle. Get that coffee refill, get some good cool water, and we will see you on the other side of the break.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Live. It's our last segment. You know, there's just so much that goes into this holistic way of being. And it's not, you know, holistic medicine is great, but it's like, this is about us, you know, it's about how can you just, you know, talk about the, that's why we have this program. And that's why these archives are never old. You know, oxygen from the air is important. The what you put in your body to eat and where you get it is important. You cannot, the medicine of the earth is right there. However, you can eat all the broccoli you want because it does have anti-cancer properties and other things, and I'm using that as an example, but you can eat all you want, but if it's in depleted soil, or if you're taking antacids and you can't, or some kind of other medication that's causing you not to assimilate it, you might suffer from not having what it has to give you fully. So this isn't meant to confuse you, but God knows where you are. God knows where we are now. He knows what kind of crazy world we live in. So let's just start simple. So first of all, the power of hope is huge. Hope is amazing. Hope is not just something that you don't have that you want to have. Oh, I hope that I get happy. No, hope is something that you already have dwelling in you, that if you think you've lost it, it may be that it's just kind of temporarily sleeping. It's like Jesus with the young girl. She's not dead, she's sleeping. You're not dead, you're sleeping. If you don't feel anything, you're not dead, you're sleeping. Why don't you feel anything? Why aren't you waking up? Is it part of you? Is it part of things you don't want to give up? Do you not want to give up that alcohol? Do you not want to give up that abusive anger stuff inside you, the bitterness, the resentment? Now, sometimes you feel, I can't get rid of it, because or you don't even know it's there. Maybe it's, well, you don't know what happened to me. I was harmed. I was raped. I was beaten up. I was abused. I was laughed at. These things are real. These things are hard, and they're not to be minimized. They are huge. At the same time, if they've happened to you, this woman, 80-year-old woman I'm telling you about, it's not without tears. The desert mother of way back that was read by this priest, who's talking about that this transition, it's a spiritual second half of life. And it's not about being without tears. It's not about without being without pain and sometimes numbness, sometimes darkness. But hope is huge. So while you're working with the mainstream, start looking at, but you don't want to feel dull, but you want to get help. If you have to get help in for a short period of time to where you need to be in the medication with medications, maybe you need to be hospitalized, you go ahead and do it. But, you know, you can feel confused. You can feel discouraged. You can feel bitter. You can feel angry because of what life is happening to you now. However, always have hope. And this is what some of our prayers are teaching us if we embrace them correctly. Always have hope. I want to talk to you about real fast because this is not about, this part is not religious. This is called El Duende. I don't know how to, or Tenor Duende. I do not know how to pronounce it exactly. So just please bear with me. It was coined by, in this sense, by a Spanish folklorist who you all may have read, or maybe should have read, Federico Garcia Lorca. He was very popular in Buenos Aires and all over the world in 1933. He wrote in Spanish. Of course, it's been translated just forever. He just an amazing poet. I remember reading him as a little hippie chick, so I guess you could call me. And so he had this brilliant lecture about the theory and function of duende. And of course, I'm sure he said it much more beautifully than I could ever. But it's about, he called it El Duende, the spirit of evocation, not the evocation of the spirit, but the spirit of evocation. In other words, having soul, something that brings you to awakening your soul. A heightened, and if you look it up in the definition having to do with this particular usage, is a heightened state of emotion, expression, and authenticity, often connected with flamenco. Now, it doesn't have to be, but this was how it was first brought out. The artistic and especially musical term was derived from the duende, an elf or goblin-like magic creature in Spanish mythology. Now, I'm not telling you to go off to some goblin-like creature. What I'm telling you is this power that's in myth and in fables and in ancient Greece. And then, of course, in our own beauty, in our own religiousness, in our own Holy Spirit. It's all about what can evoke the spirit in you, awaken you. So he talks about flamenco. He talks about it's the power. He says the duende then is a power, not a work. It's a struggle, not a thought. I have heard an old maestro of the guitar say the duende is not in the throat. The duende climbs up inside of you from the soles of the feet, meaning this, it is not a question of ability, but of true living style, of blood, of the most ancient culture of spontaneous creation. He suggests, this is Lorca, everything that has black sounds in it has duende. That means in dark, mysterious, deepness, the sense, mysterious power which everyone senses and no philosopher explains, is in its sum the spirit of the earth. And then he talks in how different philosophers, and of course he's coming from 1933, 1920, he's coming from his own self as well. But it's about this, he talks a lot about the dark sounds. So when I talk about this thing about the depression, sometimes our own darknesses can help create in us that the evocation of the spirit of God, the spirit of hope, the spirit of joy, not pleasure, not 5 minute, 5 second release from, you know, addiction with addictions or food or online, you know, clicking. Maybe this new coffee pot will help me. Those things might give you temporary reprieve, and I am not always against those things in the tiniest doses. I am against things like that will hook you, like, you know, pornography and heroin and things like that. This is, no, we're not going there. But But it's about if you don't feel, it may be okay right now. When you hear, whether it's flamenco is your thing or something that evokes spirit in you, it is not just one giant crescendo. You have to have crescendo, decrescendo. What is crescendo, decrescendo? Crescendo going up, decrescendo coming down. You must have those in order to evoke a spirit that will make you cry. A movie must have a crescendo and a decrescendo, or you would not pay money to watch it. You wouldn't go to Netflix. You wouldn't cry those tears. And it can be in any genre you want. It can be anywhere. It can be about people dying. It can be about the earth sinking. It can be about old historical things. You have it within you. You have it within you today. So building your emotional system is one, taking inventory of it. If you're at a place you don't feel much, don't feel despondent by that. Some people go feel more despondent. Well, I don't feel anything. Well, you are at the place you don't feel anything. I've been there. I know what that feels like. I've also been at the place where I have felt the most deepest things in the world. My grandchild dying, the most joyous thing, my grandchild being born, my own child, you know, the heights being finally looking at something, looking at the stars, my own little son, just the most beautiful things, watching other people, seeing my dog go for a swim when he's never doesn't even know what water is. You know, these joys, hearing a piece of music that will evoke tears, others that will might repulse me just because it's the music. It teaches you. As I said the other day, feeling that cello or that even playing one note on a cello next to my body gave me something. Why? I didn't play cello, but it was something that evokes a spirit inside. Helping someone, listening to someone speak, doesn't have to be an expert. Learning from those around you, getting help when you need it. So right now, know that the hope is within you. That take the next step if you need the mainstream help. You need to go get the just boring stuff like making appointments and getting in there and talking to someone. Understanding. Treat yourself with kid gloves. Find that El Duende. Know that that comes from God. It comes from you. That depression is not a life sentence unless you make it one. Don't make it one. So you can just as readily walk into a new reality. You don't know. Nothing in you is a done deal. It really isn't until God says it's a done deal. So embrace that. Know that there's hope inside you. Find it. And we'll talk about that more tomorrow. I am Dr. Michelle. You can email me DM live at breadboxmedia.com. God bless you. See you tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.